This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM, webcast at kcrw.com, and distributed by NPR.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, massive changes at Disney are enough to give Snow White gray hair. Then, viral video site YouTube strikes a deal with the Boob Tube. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Stick around, it's The Business from NPR. Get your pocket protectors ready. Here comes the Hollywood News Caravan, and it's bursting with techie tidbits. This just in from the Don't Squeeze the Charmin department. Charmin Networks, the producer of music and movie file sharing software Kazaa, agreed last week to pay more than $115 million in restitution to record labels and a lesser, undisclosed amount to Hollywood studios. The payment settles suits brought around the world claiming that the service facilitated illegal downloads. The company had boasted that their software had been downloaded 389 million times. Elsewhere, in a first-of-its-kind deal, the web superstar Amazon.com announced it's moving into film production. Amazon acquired the feature rights to Keith Donahue's novel, The Stolen Child. They say they won't be financing the film, but rather plan to select a director and then send the creative package over to a Hollywood studio, presumably with free shipping if the director costs more than $25. Last week, Microsoft made a similarly innovative deal to acquire the syndication rights to the lamentably canceled Fox TV comedy Arrested Development. But don't expect to see online deals like this for longer-running shows like The OC anytime soon. The pact was made largely because of Arrested Development's Arrested Development. The show was canceled after spending just three seasons on Fox, and with only 53 episodes produced, Fox found itself with potentially little interest in TV syndication, which is why the show wound up on Microsoft's renovated MSN network. In irony news, now that CGI powerhouse Pixar is running the show over at Disney Animation, their first order of business is hand-drawn, two-dimensional animation. Pixar chieftains John Lasseter and Ed Catmull have rehired the creative principals behind Disney's 2D hits The Little Mermaid and Aladdin. Writer-directors Ron Clements and John Musker and composer Alan Menken will all be going to work on The Frog Princess, Toon Sweet. Finally, DreamWorks producers Walter Parks and Laurie MacDonald have acquired the rights to the true life story of Kyle MacDonald, no relation. MacDonald had made headlines recently for trading a red paperclip for a series of other items over the course of the last year. After 14 trades of ever-increasing value, a fish-shaped pen for a small doorknob, the doorknob for a camping stove, the stove for a power generator, MacDonald ended up with a house in Saskatchewan, Canada. While the financial terms of the deal were not disclosed, DreamWorks insiders say Parks and MacDonald traded both their understanding of dramatic tension and their sense of self-respect for the rights to the story. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up later on The Business, the TV networks try to learn from the mistakes of the music industry. But next, hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off the lot you go.
Hi-ho, hi-ho. It's home from work we go. Hi ho, hi ho, hi ho, hi ho, hi ho. It's home from work we go.
The Walt Disney Company has a special mystique. It's the last studio to still have its founder's name on the gate. It's the only studio that doesn't report to a corporate master in New York or Japan, and it's the most well-known and beloved movie brand outside of Hollywood. Inside the business, Disney is as well known for its uptight corporate culture as for its compelling comeback story. After years in the doldrums, CEO Michael Eisner arrived in 1984 and turned Disney into a fabulously profitable entertainment mega monolith. He also became one of Hollywood's most feared and loathed figures and was blamed for destroying Disney's position as the unquestioned leader in animation. Eisner was replaced by Robert Iger last October, and a welcome calm came over the Mouse House. But that calm was shattered last week when Disney Studios chairman Dick Cook announced a massive restructuring. They'll now focus on mainstream tentpole movies released under the core Walt Disney Pictures banner and drastically reduce the number of movies they'll make. Disney Studio also laid off 20%, or some 650, of their employees, including longtime production president Nina Jacobson. The business producer Matt Holtzman spoke with Ann Thompson, deputy film editor for The Hollywood Reporter, about the changes.
Ann Thompson, welcome to the business.
Thank you.
So how long have insiders been aware that these big changes were coming?
Actually, it was a bit of a surprise. I think Nina Jacobson leaving may have been something that people were speculating about. And there was some talk of, you know, focusing on the brand. That whole agenda was always being talked about. And some downsizing, but the scale of 650 employees all over the company, bringing the release slate down to 10 pictures or 12 pictures a year, it was a bit dramatic, more than people were expecting.
So there wasn't a sense that people associated with the previous regime would be extricated, that those people seem like they're in pretty good stead?
Well, Dick Cook, who's the chairman of the motion picture studio, has been there for 30 years. He's like a Disney lifer. I mean,
right.
He used to work at the theme park. He's a good old boy. He's somebody who's going to survive every regime that goes through Disney.
Right.
And he understands it really well. And if you look at the essentials of what makes a Disney movie and how it feeds all the different parts of the company, they are a very specific studio for whom focusing on the brand in that way, the family brand, and now that they have Pixar, all the animated movies, makes a lot of sense. It's just that they're going in an entirely different direction from the way the rest of the industry is going.
Well, let's talk about that. Now, you can understand, you know, studios are conglomerates, and conglomerates have layoffs because that makes them more profitable. But this idea that a film studio is going to reduce its slate from 18 to 12, 11, or 8, and I don't know if the number has really been determined
yet. It's about 12.
Okay,
yeah.
12. So they're reducing their output dramatically. Why would they do that? If movies are their product, why would they drop the number so much?
As I understand it, when they really crunched the numbers and looked at what works and what doesn't work, and when the Wall Street people look at it, it's like a no-brainer to them. They say it's all about which movies return the most on investment, the old ROI deal. And when they look at that, those Disney-branded movies return better. The Pirates of the Caribbean and the Cars, the two biggest hits of the summer this summer. And that's the other thing. Why are they cutting back at the height of their success, right? But I get it. In their particular case, if they do so much better with those movies, why compete in the terrible live-action business that has never worked for them as long as they've been trying to make live-action movies?
But that seems like kind of a coming to Jesus recently, because maybe even a decade ago, it was all about feeding the pipeline. We need more product to put on the web and on DVD and on cable and everywhere else. Now suddenly we're seeing the flip side of that.
Well, I think that it's possible that Robert Iger, who comes from television and who is not a movie person and is actually able to look at Disney
now
from
the chairman
Dick Cook's boss,
right.
Is able to look at it a little more objectively, perhaps, and say, you know, than someone like, you know, Michael Eisner, who, you know, comes from television originally but had been in movies for a very long time. He's able to sort of say, this is how I want it to go. These are the numbers that I want to see, and I don't have to do it the way everyone else is doing it. The future of the business, as a lot of people predict it, it isn't going to happen tomorrow. It's not what the studios are doing now. They're hanging on to their enormous inflated studio production and marketing and distribution companies as, you know, for dear life, and the high budget movies that they make and everything else, the volume that they create to go through all those pipelines. But at Disney, I think they may be, in fact, looking at what the studios are going to look like a few years from now when they focus on tentpoles and smaller budget movies, and they make a lot fewer of what they call the movies in the middle.
And of course, tentpoles, one of the reasons to make those is because in the international market now is equal perhaps to the domestic market.
And it's way ahead of it.
It's way ahead of it. All right. So, and those big movies do well around the world, whereas the smaller movies don't necessarily translate as well.
I'm a big believer that each individual movie should be made based on, you know, what it really might return, and they should spend the money on little budgets, middle budgets, and big budgets as they see fit, but they should be intelligent about it. The studios have a tendency to throw enormous sums of money at these enormous movies that really are often crap. I mean, if you look at The Island, or, you know, there are a lot of examples of movies that did not, you know, that turned out not to be tentpoles after all.
Okay, well, let's talk about the movies that are. Right now, Disney, like you say, is at the height of its powers. Pirates of the Caribbean is doing gangbusters. They even have one more in the series already in production. And at the height of Disney's power, they fire the head of production, Nina Jacobson.
Well, that is an indication that they don't think that she is necessarily the right person to proceed with the so-called branded entertainment that they have in mind, and that Oren Aviv, who's their head of marketing and the one of the executive producers and creators of a movie called National Treasure starring Nick Cage, which turned into a hit for them, and a sequel is in the works, this guy is the right guy to take them into the future. Now, Dick Cook comes from distribution. This is the second major studio in the year to put another marketing guy as head of production. And, in fact, over at Universal, it's Mark Schmugger, who was made head of the studio with a guy named David Lindy. And it's a sign of what they think is important. Marketing is so valuable to them that they're willing to throw out someone that a lot of people consider to be a very competent person.
What's interesting about her is that she definitely did shepherd a lot of very non-Disney films while she was at Disney, the Coen Brothers movies and
Wes Anderson.
Right. And what was her kind of thinking behind that? Any idea?
Well, they weren't high-budget movies. I mean, the Lady Killers may have been a high-budget movie for the Coens with Tom Hanks starring, and that did not work out. But they did okay with Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? That was, I think, the highest-grossing Coen Brothers movie to date. And they've done... she was tough. I mean, she went after Grazer and Howard when they wanted to do The Alamo and basically with Russell Crowe. I mean, it would have been an enormous budget for this period Western, and they would have been taking, you know, 35% of the back end or something. And she stood up to them and basically said, oh, I'm not going to do that and unless you bring the budget down. And they had a face-off, and she ended up going with another director. And the movie was still a flop, but
it
would have
costly,
been less expensive.
Less costly flop.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Now, Disney earlier this year purchased Pixar for $7.4 billion. Did that play a part in this in the plans they've got now to lay off all these people?
I don't know that answer. It's possible that that was part of the equation, but that's not my sense from talking to them. My sense is that they looked at what they did best. They looked at the top 100 pictures of all time. They said, we could have made 80 of those movies with a trim here, you know, to get rid of the R rating or whatever. And that's the focus that we're going to, you know, it is a tentpole focus. It really is. Although Dick Cook said, maybe I would have been happy to make Devil Wears Prada too. So he knows there's a wide range of movies, and he'll make those decisions accordingly.
So given all the changes that have happened and are going to happen at Disney, what does it mean for the average moviegoer who likes to see Disney movies?
Nothing. I mean, there's a whole year ahead with a full slate that has to go through. I have the funny feeling that this is a way of, you know, cutting back on their overhead, trimming legal, financial, home video, all the little people around the world that they can pull. I mean, Sony did it too. Warner Brothers did it too. It's what Wall Street demands in this day and age. They love cutbacks. And that's part of what will happen. I'm going to be very curious to see if he really keeps it down to 12. He says he's going to. Is he going to? He may not.
Right. Somehow I can't believe that'll be the case.
I don't think so.
Well, I guess we'll see. Ann Thompson is the deputy film editor of The Hollywood Reporter. She's also the writer of the weekly Risky Business column and the Risky Biz blog. Ann Thompson, thanks for coming on The Business.
Thank you.
Coming up next on The Business, the web saves a network sitcom. Last December, NBC's Saturday Night Live aired a short film featuring Chris Parnell and Andy Samberg going to the movies on a lazy Sunday. The film somehow made it to the viral video site YouTube. According to the New York Times, it was viewed 5 million times in just a few days. One of the people watching was NBC Entertainment president Kevin Riley.
I'm away on my Christmas holiday, and I keep getting these calls and emails from people saying, you know, you got to check it out. And frankly, at that point, YouTube wasn't even on my radar. All I knew is that the Chronicles of Narnia video, I heard it was wildfire on the web. Went on YouTube, clicked. I said, wow, that's cool. You know, look at that. It actually works. You know, clean download, and there it is. And frankly, you know, in my holiday state, didn't even dawn on me, like, wait a minute, what's our content doing on this site? Shortly thereafter, I got one of our lawyers sort of emailing asking the same thing. You know, this is copyright infringement, and we have our own digital initiatives, and we got to rein this thing in. So our first response is just as a viewer saying, wow, this is interesting. And then you back up and say, and illegal. And potentially really problematic.
The network's lawyers promptly demanded that the video be removed from YouTube, even though it was getting a huge amount of attention and was even inspiring equally funny homemade spinoffs. NBC seemed to be missing the fact that this was the most exciting thing to happen to the increasingly unhip SNL in 10 years. But despite the network's knee-jerk reaction, NBC was in fourth place in primetime, and they needed to start thinking outside the TV box. Cut to June, and NBC had struck a promotional deal with YouTube. And early this month, another viral phenomenon occurred. This time, the network was watching intently. The studio had produced a pilot for the WB network called Nobody's Watching, about two young sitcom fans that end up in a reality show. The NBC-produced pilot, as is often the case with pilots, never got picked up by its original customer, the WB. But the pilot did somehow end up on YouTube, and within a week, more than 100,000 people had seen at least part of it. Emboldened by the show's online success, NBC has decided to put the show on its air, perhaps signaling a sea change in the television's relationship to the web. Have we gone from "I'll see you in court" to "Can I buy you a drink?" Kevin Riley is president of NBC Entertainment. Kevin Riley, welcome to the business.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Let's get started with how NBC got into business with YouTube, because it reminds me of sort of a sixth grade romance where you start out in the schoolyard and you show the girl that you like her by kicking her in the shins.
Right.
And then ultimately you're holding hands and nuzzling and all that down the road.
That's right.
This got started with some cupcakes and Saturday Night Live. I'll let you tell the story. How did this go from sort of kicking in the shins to "I like you"?
We've learned a real lesson from the music business that you cannot fight these things simply by enforcement, you know, or denial. You know, we are going to continue to fight a two-pronged battle, which is to fight theft and piracy and protect our rights, while at the same time doing a healthy amount of experimentation and trying to figure out new business models that'll benefit everybody. So it really is a two-prong attack, and our initial instinct is to let it be known that we're not going to allow our content to just be allow people to just help themselves to our content, while at the same time saying, look, this is the new universe. We are actively courting and trying to develop this digital frontier as part of our own relationship with our audience, as part of our own business models, and let's jump into the pool. So we had an initial conversation. John Miller, who runs the NBC agency, had contact somewhat coincidentally through on another matter with YouTube and started exploring the idea, you know, what if we, you know, what can we do together, you know, and what if we brought some advertising to the party? And they said, well, advertising is our ultimate business model, and that's what we're playing with. We don't really have any advertisers at this point. Judd said, well, maybe we can help with that. If we were to make this legal, let's define it. So we kind of put together a three-pronged plan to roll this out.
Mm-hmm. This is the conversation that probably the record companies should have had with Napster, say, 5 years ago.
Absolutely.
Rather than we're going to sue everyone in a sweatshirt with an iPod.
Absolutely.
Coming up after a short break, more with NBC Entertainment President Kevin Riley. You're listening to The Business from NPR. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business. After the unsold pilot of a sitcom called Nobody's Watching became must-see PC, NBC decided to pick up the show. Kevin Riley is the network's programming chief.
I want to talk just briefly about the recent headlines with Bill Lawrence, who, if people don't know him, he's the creator of Scrubs and is also the creator of a show called Nobody's Watching, a title which I wouldn't blame you if you instinctively shied away from with NBC being in fourth place in primetime. But kidding aside, this is a fascinating deal, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about it. Basically, this show is a pilot produced by NBC Universal.
That's right. Our studio.
It goes to the WB. The WB gets the plug yanked on it, and it winds up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through what happens next.
Again, a viral copy. It was not officially submitted or put up on YouTube by anyone at NBC. It came through a somewhat of a distant connection to the show and found its way over onto YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a call that this thing is sort of going through the roof. I think the online audience loves the fact that this was a busted pilot from the WB, and they're saying, this is what's wrong with television, why don't they put this on? And Bill Lawrence is one of our top talents, and he and I started talking, and he said, there's something here. I know we can take this to the next step. It could end up finding its way back to primetime, but let's continue to blur the line between fact and fiction.
Let me read you a line from Daily Variety,
right.
July 20th, a Thursday. Quote, in a move that underscores NBC's desire to plunge into non-traditional comedy development, Net has also agreed to fund a series of viral videos featuring the characters from Watching.
Mm-hmm.
Producers began working on the videos even before the Peacock greenlight, and the first vignettes could hit the internet by September.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible? Let me ask you, that's an accurate statement, right?
That's right.
Is it even possible to fund viral videos? I mean, isn't the nature of viral video that people sort of pick up on them and send them around? Or do you think that there's something about the medium that it doesn't matter necessarily if it's good, it'll work?
That's a good question. And I think the answer is both.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are, if it's good, it will work. And that could come from an experienced producer with something that was professionally produced in Hollywood, like Nobody's Watching. And now that producer is just embracing the spirit of something a little bit different, and it could be something that completely is viral and came out of nowhere and is a little bit of moment in time. We're also looking to capitalize on those videos that come out of nowhere in a moment in time. We're going to be doing a lot of experimentation from now on. Look, trying to crack the Hollywood system, the traditional ways of doing business. You write a script, you get an agent, that agent sends it around, maybe it gets, you know, you work your way up, and eventually you get to develop your own show with a network. That system is still healthy. But this creates, just as open sourcing in the online world has created access, the internet opens up the world of possibilities and creates connections where none seemed possible before.
Mm-hmm.
If we can capitalize on that and create a new access point where talent can find their way through, either outside, inside the system that wants to get outside the system or outside the system that wants to get in, it can really lead to some fresh ideas and a discovery of fresh talent.
Let me read you a quote from Bill Lawrence.
Yep.
If network TV doesn't embrace the internet as a place to launch and test shows, but also as a place where shows can live, they're going to fall further and further behind, he said, end quote. Do you buy that? I mean, is that something that's on your agenda? Do you want to launch and test shows online?
As one part of our business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you're seeing an explosive growth in online capability right now. There'll be a point where it will seek its own level. And I ultimately think the real win for these two worlds are to work together. And the fact that somebody with their home video cam can turn it on themselves and edit it with equipment that comes loaded into their PC, that brings tools to people that they never had before. If that can make its way to my desk and ultimately onto the air, so much the better for all of us.
Kevin Riley is president of entertainment for NBC. Kevin, thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you.
The business is changing, and some companies and people are embracing that change. Some, but not all. We end the program today with a commentary by veteran TV producer and writer Rob Long.
I was talking to an agent friend of mine this week. I know. Agent, friend, mine. These things don't often go together. But in this case, I really was talking to an agent friend of mine. I was telling him about an internet venture that I'm involved with. It's a new twist on internet-based video. And when I was done sketching out the project and how cool it was going to be and asking him what he thought of various domain names we've come up with, he got very quiet and had a relieved-looking smile on his face. What? I asked. I'm just so glad to hear this. You guys really needed to reinvent yourselves.
Us guys?
Writers, you writers. It's just a whole new world out there. There are new ways of delivering and creating content, more channels of distribution, more downward pressure on compensation, smaller back-end profits. It's just a totally new business. It's really changed.
I know.
I mean, I've been an agent for 6 years. I've seen some stuff. The business is changing. I tell all my clients, the business is changing. You've got to be more entrepreneurial. You've got to take more risks. You got to keep your overhead low. I mean, take you guys. Lateral movement, no real success, solid rep, but, you know.
No, I don't know.
I mean, I hear you talk about your internet business, and I hear you talk about your little radio thing, and I think, good. You know, good. The upheaval in the business is going to hit writers hard. You're going to have to get your fingers in a lot of different pies. It's not going to be just show up, get a studio deal, get another studio deal, get a show, consult on the staff, get a deal, live on Georgina, pay Crossroads, boom. You know? It's going to be scramble, 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 scratch, scratch, scratch. Think about Chatsworth, substitute teach. You know?
Wow.
And I'm not saying this to depress you. I'm actually giving you a compliment. Is the internet thing going to work? Probably not. Does the radio whatever thing pay anything? Peanuts, right? But you're moving in the right direction. You're diversifying. You're not waiting. You're being entrepreneurial. That's what's important. Now, unfortunately, the guy was right. But what he forgot was the great thing about upheavals is they upheave everything and everyone, especially percentage players. You're so right. I said, the business is changing. I mean, it must be really hard to be an agent these days.
What do you mean?
Well, the business is changing. Yeah, but not the agency business. That will never change.
Let's be honest, I say. You guys weren't making real money off of commissions for the past 10 or 15 years, right?
It was all package fees, multi-year deals. And with those gone or waning, you're going to have to do business the old way. One piece at a time, scrambling and scratching for your 10%, setting up your clients on multiple projects with multiple buyers. I mean, for the past 20 years, the image of the agent has morphed from loud-talking salesmen in plaid jackets and pastrami sandwiches to sleek Armani businessmen in subdued corporate offices and Toro hand rolls. But you're going to have to go back. The business is changing, and in a lot of ways, it's changing back.
At which point my car arrived. Oh, didn't I mention that we were having this conversation while outside a restaurant waiting for our cars? See, that's where all the really juicy conversations take place.
Rob Long is a veteran TV producer and writer who lives in L.A. And that's The Business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna and Thea Challoner. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com, keyword The Business. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
2, 6, 0, 12. Make a dozen. I told you that I'm crazy for these cupcakes, cousin.
Yo, where's the movie playing?
Upper West Side, dude.
Well, let's hit up Yahoo Maps to find the dopest route.
I prefer MapQuest.
That's a good one, too.
Google Maps is the best.
True that.
Double true. 68th and Broadway.
Step on it, sucker.
What you wanna do, Chris?